please the court, Joseph R. Lopez. I've been appointed.
You will proceed when called, please.
I'm sorry, Judge. I thought you called.
Mr. Lopez.
Thank you, sir. I apologize, Your Honor.
Now, the appellee to get seated.
I was a little bit too much of a hurry, I suppose. May I proceed, Your Honors? Your Honors, we're here in regard to Mr. Perez's plea. The first thing I'd like to discuss with the court is at the time of Mr. Perez's plea, during the plea colloquy held between the sentencing court and Mr. Perez, Mr. Perez was told by the sentencing court that he was subject to a 5-year mandatory minimum. Thereafter, what occurred was there was a relevant conduct argument made by the government to include into Mr. Perez's sentencing certain items which were recovered in Berwyn, Illinois, which is in a different district in which the plea was taken. As a result of that, what had happened is we had argued that in the Illinois state case, the Illinois state court had suppressed the evidence in that particular prosecution, which did not involve Mr. Perez. The sentencing court used the drug quantity that was suppressed by the state court in the federal court proceeding, and we strongly objected to that. Now, I understand the state of the law indicates that a sentencing court can use this particular evidence as relevant conduct, and we understand that. One of the things that we point to, though, in our argument in regard...
I don't understand what your argument is. I could understand an argument that we should overrule Rima, but if you're not arguing that, what's left?
No, I was getting to that, Judge, and I was the question that I had here, I think in what separates this case from the other cases, the distinguishing feature, I think, is what occurred at the plea colloquy. And the plea colloquy was, Mr. Perez, you're subject to a 5-year mandatory minimum.
It doesn't have anything to do with Rima.
It does not, Judge, but and perhaps maybe it should have been addressed in a motion to withdraw the plea. But our argument, Judge, that is it's unfair and to use drugs that have been suppressed by a prior court to enhance the sentencing level of an individual.
Okay, that entails the argument that we should overrule Rima, but I didn't see such an argument in your brief. And I obviously, given what I said in the Jewell case, might be sympathetic to such an argument, but I didn't see it.
Well, Judge, maybe I didn't make it clear enough, but we are asking this court to find an exception to that, or...
No basis for an exception. It's...
It's a decision that we're stuck with, I understand that, Judge. It goes all the way back to...
We're not stuck with anything. But we can't say Rima doesn't apply on Tuesday.
No, I understand that, Judge. But we're asking for some relief in that regard. The other thing that we'd like to talk
about... Mr. Lopez, you never raised the issue about the mandatory minimum after the probation officer's report came out, did you?
No, I filed an objection to the calculated amount.
So at that time, you had a probation officer's report that showed that the mandatory minimum had, in fact, changed from the 5-year to the 10-year, based upon what the probation officer said was the relevant conduct of the drugs in the house, right?
Yes, we did.
And you didn't move to revoke his plea at that point?
No, we did not. We filed our objection on that point.
Now, at the change of plea hearing, was there any discussion regarding what the mandatory minimum would be other than the prosecutor saying that they intended to use the drugs from the house to enhance his sentence, as I think even the prosecutor used the term 404B? Was that the only discussion at the change of plea?
That was the only discussion at the change of plea, if I recall correctly.
At the arraignment, was there any discussion regarding that?
Not that I recall. Not at the arraignment. It didn't really pop up until at the time of the plea and the pre-sentence report was prepared. And that leads me to another argument, Judge. The Gall argument that we have raised in this case.
Before we leave that topic and proceed to the Gall argument, you're not arguing on appeal that his plea was involuntary based on this alleged misleading conversation about a 5-year minimum.
No, I am not.
And you're not seeking to undo the plea. You just want resentencing.
That is correct.
So what is the basis for the whole 5-year versus 10-year argument?
Well, just
stemming from the plea colloquy?
It came from the plea colloquy that he wasn't informed of the possibility the sentence would double. And as I said in the transfer, it's very difficult to explain to a defendant that your sentence is going to be increased on things that weren't contained in an indictment and things that you weren't previously notified about.
Right, claims about being misled during a plea colloquy typically lead to plea withdrawal, which is not being requested. I mean, that's the usual remedy, not resentencing.
I understand. I'm out of time, and I will sit down.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Lanter.
Dean Lanter, representing the United States. May it please the Court. In this case, Mr. Perez pled guilty to possession with intent to distribute 500 grams or more, or in excess of 500 grams of cocaine. That is what he was convicted of, that's what he pled to in the blind, and that's what the indictment charged him with. The mandatory minimum statutory penalty for that offense is 5 years, and the maximum statutory penalty is 40 years. And that's, in fact, what Judge Simon advised the defendant of at his plea hearing. Judge Simon repeatedly advised him of this and said, do you agree or disagree? Oh, excuse me. The judge advised him essentially what you're facing is a minimum of 5 years and a maximum of 40 years, bottom line. And the defendant's sentence fell within that 5-year mandatory minimum and 40-year maximum. There was no use of relevant conduct to enhance the statutory mandatory minimum to 10 years. That's calculated as relevant conduct in the guideline analysis, but that doesn't increase his mandatory minimum to 10 years. The only person who's ever indicated that the mandatory minimum became 10 years was the defendant, erroneously indicating that at his sentencing hearing. The government never suggested that, and Judge Simon never suggested that. The defendant was sentenced, the government's position, to a fair and reasonable sentence of 135 months, which was the minimum of the 135 to 168-month guideline range for his offense when including the relevant conduct from the residence.
In making his determination that the drugs found in the house were of the same course of conduct, it was clear that he ruled that the lizard stamp that was on the drugs that the defendant had in the car matched the lizard stamp on the drugs in the house and the lizard stamp found there. Were there any findings, however, that that stamp or packaging also was on the heroin and methamphetamine that was also found in the house? Or was it solely based upon the location of the drugs in the house?
I believe the record only indicates that the lizard stamp was on the cocaine recovered from the defendant's vehicle, and that matched the lizard insignia on one of the presses in the residence. I don't believe there's anything in the record as to the any insignias, if they were a lizard or other insignias, on the other drugs recovered from the residence.
But all the drugs were found in the same room in the residence together?
Most of them. There was the record indicates that most of the drugs were found in what's been labeled as the east bedroom, where most but not all, the record indicates, of the $500,000 of drugs, which included heroin, methamphetamine, large amounts of cocaine, and also marijuana. The record also indicates that the defendant and his wife were the people that owned and resided in that residence. So it's the government's position that all of those drugs, regardless of whether or not they contained a lizard insignia, were part of the same course of conduct and same series of events. Essentially, the defendant's residence, with a firearm in one room, a large amount of ammunition also in that room, a 30-ton and a 50-ton press to be able to use to press and package kilogram quantities of cocaine, a bulletproof vest, and excessive quantities of four different controlled substances, that was all part of the same operation which the defendant was running out of his residence. So it's the government's position that all of the drugs recovered from the residence were properly calculated and included as part of relevant conduct. It's the government's position that the court did not err in including that as relevant conduct. There was no evidence at all nor a suggestion that the police had deliberately violated anyone's Fourth Amendment rights at the residence in order to essentially run up the drug quantity at sentencing. And under the established case law in the Seventh Circuit, we believe that Judge Simon correctly counted that drug evidence and that firearm as relevant conduct in this case. It's the government's position that the court also did not clearly err in calculating the firearm for a two-level enhancement. The firearm was recovered from between the mattresses in the defendant's bedroom, what the defendant admitted was his own bedroom of his residence, along with these large quantities of drugs, a bulletproof vest, ammunition for that firearm and other ammunition, in addition to the two presses. And finally, it's the government's position that Judge Simon, at the end of the day, did not err in calculating a fair and reasonable sentence of 135 months under all circumstances. The judge addressed the defendant's reasons for a non-guideline sentence, talked about the defendant's lack of criminal history and his work history, and indicated that those are modest facts in the context of this very serious crime. And the judge specifically noted the fact that there were two children in the defendant's vehicle when he was transporting these large levels of narcotics. The court also addressed the defendant's third reason for a non-guideline sentence and indicated that he did not believe alleged substandard or different conditions at a county jail would justify a non-guideline sentence. He also indicated, even if that were the case, he didn't see it in this instance. So unless the court has any other questions, the government would request that the sentence at the minimum of the guideline range be affirmed as a fair and reasonable sentence.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Lopez?
Your Honor, in regard to the sentence itself, the court concluded without any basis that the advisory guideline was reasonable, and under Rita versus the United States, that presumption can no longer be made. And that's why we're asking the court to remand this case for sentencing in light of the Gall decision and other decisions that were subsequent to that, which changed the state of the law, which gave the courts the discretion in which to act. They are no longer bound by a book with a bunch of calculations in it that somebody prepared as an advisory guideline. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lopez, and we appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment in this case.